You are now tuned in to the Believe Network. Do you believe?
Hey guys, it's Nick. Before we get going today, I wanted to give you a few discount codes for the products we love and our show sponsors. So don't just turn this one off. If you're listening to this podcast, we at Hardwick Life want to reward you for your loyalty. So take 25% off of your order by using the code HardwickFF25, because after this long, we consider you friends and family. That's HardwickFF25 at Hardwick.life. It's like Hardwick.com, but that one was taken by a shirt company. So Hardwick.life is where you can find it. For 20% off at BubsNaturals.com, use the code Hardwick20. That's Hardwick20 at BubsNaturals.com. And for 10% off at Julian Bakery, use the code Nick Hardwick. That's me at JulianBakery.com. Again, Nick Hardwick at JulianBakery.com. Now, if you want to hear what I take daily and get some insight as to what you should take, maybe stay tuned. If not, skip ahead about a minute and we will be into the show. Thank you all. All right. So you want to know what you should buy? I take six of our Hardwick Life products every day. I originally started that company out of kind of selfish needs. I wanted to get access to the absolute highest grade products in the world. Our supplements are pharmaceutical grade, all of them. They've got unique delivery mechanisms. So you aren't just getting expensive urine. You're actually absorbing the products at a higher rate than cheaper store-bought supplements. I take Brain, Joint, Fuel, Phyto, Pump, and Neuro. Now, that may be a little extreme for you, but those are my jams. Now, I've done a lot of damage to my body. I need all of them. The Brain and Joint, they're kind of self-explanatory, right? Fuel is one of the only whey protein powders that I can take that doesn't upset my tummy. And we hear the same thing quite frequently from folks that don't process dairy all that well. That's because it's made from New Zealand grass-fed whey. New Zealand has the highest dairy standards in the world. There's a noticeable difference, and the flavor, it's pretty damn incredible. For a peri-workout drink, which peri-workout, you'll hear that term, it means around your workout, or to add protein midday, I put two scoops of Fuel with Pump, which has 3 grams of creatine per serving, 400 milligrams of ATP, which is the body's energy currency, and 95 milligrams of caffeine to get you all fired up. All of those, they allow you to do more work in the gym, getting better results. More work equals better results. Who would have thought? Seriously, you can work harder and have a lower rate of perceived exertion. And I like to add in Phyto, which has all of the necessary nutrients, vitamins, and minerals, along with this patented formula called TrueBrock, which contains glucoraphanin, which researchers at MIT are calling the fountain of youth. And lastly, I take Neuro about an hour before bed. Dr. Andrew Huberman, a Stanford neuroscientist, host of the Huberman Lab podcast and recent guest with Joe Rogan. I'm sure some of you listen to that guy. He's pretty awesome. Recommended in our third episode ever. We got him before he blew up. Magnesium L-threonate, as it's the only form of magnesium to cross the blood-brain barrier. And it increases levels of brain magnesium, and that leads to better cognition and a more robust memory. That's important. It also has a slight sedative effect to help you get to sleep. All right, I'm not going to bore you with more details. Get over Hardwick Life and use the code HardwickFF25 for 25% off. Now, you guys that have been following me for a while now know that I've used Bubs Naturals since the company's inception. I don't know. I may be their first ever ambassador. I know there's a lot of bigger names now that are promoting Bubs. The company has blown up and is thriving because many folks like me understand how great their product is. I take two scoops of their collagen protein and one scoop of the MCT oil powder daily with my morning coffee. Try it once, you're going to be hooked. It's unbelievably creamy. The collagen is also really a great way to sneak some protein into your kids' lives too. It's unflavored, so you can add it into pancakes, oatmeal, mac and cheese, or juice. And they're not going to notice a thing. Use the code HARDWICK20 for 20% off. Lastly, before we get to the show, I want to tell you about my friends at Julian Bakery. this company, they've really got their act together. I believe most people could use more protein in their lives. It's got a very positive effect on satiety, brain signaling, and maintaining a healthy body weight. I recommend 1 gram of protein per pound of body weight. Please don't listen to Zac Efron's trainer, who on their show falsely ties too much protein to kidney failure and loss of bone density. And certainly don't go to the Game Changers propaganda documentary on Netflix for your science. Neither of these use actual science. There's a lot of kooks out there, folks. We're going to keep fighting the good fight. I love a variety of protein. Obviously, I've told you about our whey protein, Bubs Collagen Protein, and Julian Bakery's specialty, in my opinion, is their egg white protein powder. They come in ridiculous flavors like pumpkin pie, coconut, maple glazed donut. They blend easily. They're a great addition in the middle of the day. Use the code Nick Hardwick for 10% off. That's Nick Hardwick for 10% off. All right, that's enough. Let's get you back to the show. Love y'all. Hey, gang, welcome to the Hardwick Life Podcast. I am your host, Nick Hardwick. I am so fired up for y'all to listen to this podcast today. Mike Sanders, he is the Human Performance and Wellness Coordinator with the 7th Special Forces Airborne Group of Green Berets, located in Niceville, Florida. His job, as he describes it, is to help their soldiers move effectively, efficiently, and safely through their varied environments. And yes, of course, we talk a little bit about training, but we don't get too much into the nuts and bolts and all the gory details. We do talk a lot about soldier wellness, building trust, being vulnerable, becoming a man, having faith, changing culture, raising kids. He is an awesome, awesome guy with a ton of knowledge and great optimism. I know you're going to enjoy this. I sure did. Thanks for listening, guys. Mike, give me your take on youth sports, youth athletics, and training kids. I mean, yours is in the fire right now. She's 14, travel volleyball. It's like you can't avoid it at that point, right? It's like, but I think a lot of parents, at least me, I'm like, God, I'm so hesitant to just open the floodgates completely. But I don't know. What's your philosophy?
Actually, something that stresses my wife and out a little, my wife and I out quite a bit, because quite frankly, I think what we're doing to our kids in America is wrong. I think we push them way too hard, and unfortunately, I actually live in an area that I think is, when we first moved here, right out of the gate, the first thing we talked about when we moved here was like, man, the competitive nature that they have here for the kids is super, super high. And that, I think parents have a lot of times we think we're doing the right thing by, you know, getting our kids doing these things and competing in everything under the sun and this, that, and other thing. And I don't know that it's the right thing. What we're doing, and we talk about it quite a bit, is, you know, if she plays, you know, high school volleyball, and if, or, you know, she's just coming out of middle school, but middle school volleyball, and then she plays travel volleyball, and then we have tournaments, which is exactly what we're doing. You know, you almost have a kid playing one sport along with other things year long. And, you know, like I always say, even our professional sports have seasons. You know, you guys had seasons for a reason.
Exactly right. Yeah.
And so we push our kids a little bit too much. And Julie, my wife and I, we talk about it a lot. We, in fact, I've even said these exact words, we know better. but sometimes you get, it's like, what are you going to do? Cause it is what it is. And so we're doing the best we can to kind of, you know, navigate through this. And just in short, what we are doing is we're allowing her, you know, we don't want her just playing one sport. We know for a fact that's wrong. So we try to get her involved in other sports, and she does well, at those other sports, and she does well in school. So those are always things we keep asking about. Perfect. And I find that it's actually harder for me to keep up with her than it is for her to keep up, which is interesting as well. But I've stayed out. So being a strength coach, you know, for 20 some years, I've decided to stay out of that process with her for as long as possible, but we're starting to kind of get involved with her now, this year, because we feel like it's time.
And did she come to you asking, or did you say, hey, it's time, I know what I'm doing, and, you know.
She came to us asking, yes.
Cool. And, that's probably key.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, the key that I'm looking at it with her is I just want her to have fun doing it. And I'm not going to worry about how much weight she's moving or anything like that. I want her to have fun. And because if, you know, we want this to be a lifelong thing, we don't want it to be just something that she does because dad's forcing her to do it. So I'm very cognizant of that. And I always keep track to make sure that I watch my own demeanor quite a bit to make sure that I'm not, you know, making this about dad. And that's always a tough thing to do, but you got to be careful. And, you know, I always joke around. One of the things that all parents think is they all think we have an ex Wayne Gretzky in our living in our house with it.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
You don't, you know, it's like, it's there's other things besides just sport, and it's important for sure, but there's many other things we need to be concerned about as well.
Yeah, balance and plan Bs and academics. I mean, it's like what you say, no, we don't have Wayne Gretzky living in our house. My boys, they grow up and dad was a professional football player, so they think it's like their birthright to be a professional football player, right? I'm like, fellas, it's not exactly how this works, you know? It's like, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of luck. We don't even know how big you're going to be. We hope you're going to be big strapping men that are healthy and can do life right, but you know, we try to our best. We try to let them know that there's other avenues to make good livings and have healthy lives and be happy. Like playing professional sports is not the end all be all to life. It really is not.
There's so many things in life, and you got to let them figure out what they're going to do. You know, it's interesting because I have another daughter, 6 years younger than the oldest. And she's like the artsy dance, loves horses, and all those things. And so it's weird. It's like, how did they grew up in the same household? It's completely different things. So we just try to support them and let them figure it out, you know, and give them direction, but not force them, because I've seen bad things happen to a lot of kids where that happens, you know, where they get forced into different things.
You know, I've been saying this a lot, and I love the strength and conditioning side. I love the human physiology side of things. And I ask everybody about how do they train their kids, because I talk to a lot of strength coach, a lot of people in the body world, and everyone says the same thing, right? It's like, make sure it's fun, make sure it's short, that they're coming to you. It's all kind of the same. But I have so many parents ask, is it safe for my kid to lift weights? And what is best right now? And like, my kids are in lacrosse right now, and I can't think of a more appropriate sport for their 7 and 9 years old, because you can't put on muscle really at that age. You don't have the right hormones to be able to do that. But I do feel like you can gain a massive cardiovascular base that if you run enough as a child, it's never going away. And you know, those people who are like in their 40s and slightly overweight, and then they can just pick up and go for 5-7 miles. And you're like, how'd you do that? And it's like, did you play soccer as a kid? Did you do cross country as a kid? And they're like, yeah. It's like something about that cardio base never leaves. And I don't know if that's true. It's just kind of like anecdotal what I've put together. I'm like, you got to have a huge cardio base, and I guess it kind of translates to being a workhorse. You know, the more you run, the more you can run. And then eventually the bigger your base of work, I guess, like, you know, you could get super sciencey and be like, you know, you got more mitochondrial density or volume or whatever. And it's like, eventually you can just do more work and translate that into whatever field it is you want to be in.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true. I mean, but the thing is, you know, the thing going back to lacrosse, you know, I'm, as you know, cause we've talked a little bit offline, a little bit about like my approach, but the thing that took me a long time to realize, is it, you know, when you have your kids playing, for example, lacrosse, they're also learning so many different other things as well. I mean, they're learning how to, accelerate and learning how to decelerate and being able to do that well and under control. And then there's being able to shift body weight and being able to see things peripherally and pick up objects from far to near, and, you know, being able to move their hands around. I'm doing my, this because
you you're doing your cradling
cross play right here. But anyway,
did you used to play?
No, I used to coach. So I came from the University of Denver. So coach there as well. Right. Strength conditioning as well. But anyway, so, there's just so many things that you learn from sport that, you're, you know, And the thing is our bodies remember these things. And even if you, you know, like you were saying, you can go out and do things and keep going. And that's true because our bodies remember the way things were. So like, I won't tell this whole story, but I had a hockey player that, got pretty ill and nearly died from when he was playing hockey with us. And when he came in after he'd been in the hospital and whatnot, he decided he was going to stay the summer with me. And he, before he got sick, he was one of the hardest working, just like, he wasn't the greatest player on the team. So he knew I got to work hard for it. And so he was one of my favorites. I like hardworking people. And so he showed up one day and he just looked like, he looked terrible. He looked like a shadow of his former self. And he just said to me, he's like, I'm never going to be the same, am I? And I said, yeah, you are. Your body remembers where it was. You work hard and we be patient and it will come back. I guarantee you. And it did. And that's the thing. So when we're kids and we're learning these things, it's all part of it, man. It's like, it all ends up being part of who we are and we can stop for a while and then bring it back. And it'll take a while, but your body will pick back up.
I think the really cool thing you did to that kid too, was you gave him belief. Right. So part of it is like the placebo effect. It's like, no, trust me. I'm an authority figure here. I know this. Your body's going to respond. And yes, it remembers where it came from. But two, you gave him, you breathe life into him. It's like, hey, here's hope. Chase that hope and let's see what happens. And then you stoke that fire of his hard work and he's got all that built up. And it's just like, don't shut down now. Just keep coming, keep fighting, keep battling. You'll be back.
No, that's right. And you know, the thing is that I'm a hopeful person anyway. And so I had hope for him and I cared for him very much. I cared for him to be able, and, you know, I knew what was important to him at that time in his life. He wanted to be a hockey player for the University of Denver. He wanted to do that. And so because of that, I'm hopeful. And so I'm going to let him know, listen, I'm going to give you that hope too. And we're going to get through this together. And that's what being a team is. That's what being a, I think a good coach is a coach that comes along with that individual as a coach, a friend, a mentor. And the goal is like, hey, what are your goals? Now let's go help you get them. And I'm going to give you my expertise and I'm going to do the work to help you, but you're going to have to work too. And you know, one of the things I used to tell a lot of my college athletes was that I will always stay 1 foot in front of you. I will always be just a little bit, I'll give you a little bit more than you're giving me. I always will, but I'm not going to be 2 and 3 steps in front of you. In other words, I am not going to be dragging you along, but I'll give you my best, but I'm only going to stay about 1 foot in front of you. You got to be coming behind me and doing the work.
Yep.
And I will give you the tools, but you got to pick those tools up and you got to do the work. And that's how a coaching athlete relationship should be.
I like that. You just basically say, stay in my hip. We got this. We're going to do this together. And then I think a super cool thing that really good coaches do is they see more in their athlete or whatever they're training. They see more in that person than that person sees in themselves. And then they provide kind of the optimism and then the plan to be able to tap into that more that's in that child or in that employee, whatever it is.
I mean, you know, we used to, I know I'm hitting on my college experience quite a bit, which I haven't done for 11 years. So it's amazing. We're talking about that.
Feels good. Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, back in those days, I mean, the goal was, we all knew where we wanted to go that season. Right. And we always knew, that was the ultimate goal. That was the ultimate vision. That was where you're headed. But you also had to remember, what am I doing today? And what am I doing for that kid and that person and all those things? And what does that individual need today? And that means that sometimes people come in your office and they're struggling with something and you got to stop everything you're doing and have that conversation with that individual. Because that, as you know, again, we talked offline quite a bit, but I am so convinced and so sure that of this holistic model for human performance. You know, it used to be all about physiology for me. And now I realize, man, that's part of it. But if we're not engaging the human being in the process, then we are sorely, sorely mistaken.
Mike, back it up a little bit, if we could, please. Tell people that obviously aren't familiar with you, where you're at now, what your role is, and what got you to this place.
Okay, so where I'm at right now is I'm actually working for the military, and I'm working for 7th Special Forces Group right now, which is Green Berets. That we are, and what we do is it's no different than the days when, well, I guess the overall vision of what we're trying to do is no different, is we are preparing these individuals we're working with to step into an environment and move effectively, efficiently, and safely. So that's what strength and conditioning is. It's not about getting the ends, are not always about being the strongest guy. The ends is actually being able to help someone move in that environment. So strength, for example, is a means to the end. And what the end is to help people move effectively, efficiently, and safely inside their environment. So that's what we're doing. So how I got here, I started out in 2000 working for the University of Denver. Went there for an assistant strength conditioning coach. My first, you know, real job for peanuts in Denver. You know,
I'm sure
starved while I was there, but we made it work. And then made myself. You know, and when I went there, I was assuming I'd be there for about 2-3 years, get my experience, and move on. And it didn't work out that way. It ended up a year and a half in. The guy that hired me, then they made left, and they made me the head strength conditioning coach at that point. So I built the program basically from that day forward, thinking again, I wasn't going to be around very long, ended up being there for 10 total years, met my wife in Denver, got married, got her first house and all that kind of stuff there. But then about 2005, somewhere in there, 2006, long story short, we won back-to-back national championships in hockey, in Division I hockey. And we got to go to the White House to meet George Bush. And it was I did not know at that time, but it was a life-changing experience for me. And I knew something was going on because, you know, you feel it, man. There's like, oh, what's going on here? And there was something
really, visceral.
Yeah, really powerful going on. And long story short, I met the president. As a team, we went out and we got to go see this is the first time I've ever been in DC. So we got to see the World War II monument, Vietnam Wall, and all the historic stuff. And I was just getting rocked, like rocked. And I remember sitting in front of the World War II monument. And this was before it was even actually completely dedicated or opened or whatever they call it, but it was, you could still go to it and whatnot. And I remember standing there and I just remember thinking, man, no offense to all of our athletes out there, but I remember saying to myself, I want to do more with my life. And this is part of my life. And I'm so glad I had this. And looking back on it, I learned so much that in those days to get me where I'm at today, but I wanted to do something more. And I had no idea what that even meant. So then fast forward, I found out that these positions were coming open, that they were going to start hiring, strength conditioning staff to start a program, which is the good old fashioned model that we use for Olympic pro and collegiate sport. And we were bringing it into the military. And quite frankly, no one knew what that would look like. And that's what's so awesome about what I've been doing for the last 11 years is that we stepped in using our knowledge and our experience and all the things we brought from sport and say, hey, can we build this? And what does that look like inside the military? And it's been an amazing experience. And I've been part of some amazing things and I'm so thankful for it. So with that said, then I ended up working for the SEAL teams. I did that for 2 years up in Virginia Beach, working for a group of men up there. And then I went there as a human performance specialist, and then 7th Special Forces Group was coming here and they were talking about starting a program. And so they asked me if I would come here and start the program from scratch. And so that was 9 years ago, something like that. So I came here 9 years ago and I've been here since. So that's the thick of it all.
And title is again, human performance specialist.
So I've changed now. They've moved me up to a level, and now what I am is I'm called the Human Performance and Wellness Coordinator. Awesome. So what that means is we have dietitian. We have strength conditioning specialists, physical therapists, athletic trainers, sports psychologists. And then I work closely with our chaplains and our behavioral health psychologists and whatnot on the compound as well.
I was going to say, you throw that wellness word in there, and that takes on a completely different side of things, doesn't it? Did you ever think that that was going to be part of the gig? I mean, I've always thought this about strength coaches, because every strength coach that I got to work with ended up being my best friend, right? I'm still in touch with all of them today. I love those dudes. I got to spend more time. And probably like you were saying, it's like, it's couch time, right? It's like, hey, come into my office. What's going on? Or, hey, I'm coming in. Can we talk for a minute? You know, I got these things going on. This coach is doing this. And you end up kind of being the moderator between the higher ranking guys and the body, the athletes that you're working with.
That's a key point. Man, there was something else I wanted to touch on, but now it escaped my mind that you said, but it might come back. Oh, let me quick, if you don't mind, I'll just say something really quickly about the wellness piece.
Oh, yeah, we can touch on that plenty. Yeah. Yeah. So, because it's super important.
Yeah. So the wellness piece, that's the thing that's really, it is interesting how that kicks in there, right? But at the end of the day, you want people, again, to be able to move effectively, efficiently, and safely inside their environment. And there's going to be times when we're preparing people for that environment. And there's times when we're maintaining their overall performance and health or whatever it is. And there's time when they got to heal. And, you know, we're seeing catastrophic injuries now, where guys have been shot 6 times and guys, you know, missing arms and all kinds of things that we deal with now. So the wellness piece is definitely part of that. And what I always say is that if you have a staff of individuals, there's going to be a spectrum that everybody falls on in that health, or excuse me, on the performance and wellness piece. And what I always say is wellness, people that are more educated on the wellness side, when you're in a human performance sort of situation, they have to be able to dip their toes and understand the human performance side of things. But really focus on that wellness piece. And then if you have a strength conditioning staff or human performance staff, they've got to be able to dip their toes on the wellness piece, but still stay in their area of expertise. And that's the key, man. That's like, that is the secret sauce of being able to really work with human beings. When you have a staff of individuals, from the chaplain to the psychologist, to the dietitian, to the strength conditioning coach, meathead, and I'll make say that jokingly because I'm a meathead.
Of course.
But you know, when you have that and those individuals are willing to understand that they don't know everything and they're okay with it, and I need this individual to get guidance or whatever, man, I'm telling you, it changes everything. It changes everything. And now suddenly your human performance program is at a world-class level that many places still haven't gotten to, for the simple fact that they want to keep their own toys to themselves. Got on a tangent on that one. Sorry.
No, but it's super. I mean, to me, that's incredible. And one, you have to be a really good leader to get your strength and conditioning specialist to know enough about the wellness to direct the guys in an appropriate way, so they're not fighting the fight, right? Like, because that's, I know, coming from an alpha male world, that you put up resistance. Somebody throws a suggestion out there. Hey man, you look like you're struggling a little bit. I ain't struggling. You know, it's like, but you have to learn how to speak the language appropriately to even be inviting or to welcome somebody into a space that, for a lot in the special forces world, a lot in the professional sports world, especially the fight game, you know, that's a big stigmatized zone. It's like, I don't have anything wrong with me. I'm not going to do that. How have your guys responded to having the wellness portion, you know, a team clinician, you got the chaplain, you've got, you know, mental health services embedded into the team. How have they embraced that? And is there still some of that old school, I'll will my way through this type deal?
Oh, well, boy, there's, I mean, this question alone could keep us on the thing on this line for an hour. Man, let me start with, you know, the type A personality and being vulnerable. And when you, you know, many times, and we talk about this quite a bit, is vulnerability. Our guys say the word vulnerability. They don't even want to say the word vulnerable because they're afraid they're going to turn into a princess or something like that. So they get really nervous about such things. Right. But the reality is, you have to be open and vulnerable and allow people to see you for what's going on inside of you in order to get the help that you need. And that takes a lot of trust. Now, in special operations community, right out of the gate, you're a used car salesman. So if you show up and start talking to somebody and the first thing you do is tell them how you can help that individual, you're in trouble because that's not what they want to hear. The first thing you have to do is you have to develop a trusting relationship with that individual. That is the number, especially in the special operations community. Everybody's a used car salesman. So when they first meet you, so there's got to be,
how they view you.
Yes.
They're like, what do you have to sell me? All right. Yes. What is it?
Yeah. And for all the listeners that are used car salesmen, sorry, but that's
so they know it. They've already accepted that.
Yeah. So anyway, so you have to develop trust, and you don't develop trust by me telling you what I can do for you. The key is to find out what's going on with that individual, find out who they are, what do they need, and work that relationship first. And this goes back to what you were kind of talking about a little while ago with strength conditioning. That's why strength conditioning coaches are so important in the special operations community, because they're so used to, there's an awful stigma, which is, by the way, breaking down and going away, thank goodness. A stigma that everybody is, you know, they're going to try to keep them away from deployment. They're going to find out something's wrong with me and I can't go on my deployment, because that's what they want to do. It's like you playing in the Super Bowl, man. The worst thing in the world is somebody said you can't play in the game. Right. So this is what you've been working for since you were a little kid. So they want to deploy, they want to go do their stuff. And so it's important that, and that's why we find it so important for strength coaches in the special operations community to develop that trusting relationship, to get to know what the guys need. And the goal is not to take them off of the deployment cycle. The goal is to do everything we can to keep them in the deployment cycle. And what we're doing at Seventh Group now is we're leveraging, it's almost like a starting point, not saying it's always this way, but it's almost a starting point. And I learned this from collegiate athletics, that whole idea is like, hey, if we hire the right people, the right strength coaches that develop relationships, that have the right heart, which is I am doing everything I can to find out what your needs are and then give you the potential you need so you can perform at your highest possible level, because that's all we're trying to do.
Yep.
You got to hire the right people. And we're using, I shouldn't say using, we're leveraging is not a good way either. I was saying, if we're taking those relationships and then we're breaking down the stigmas and bringing in our psychologists and our chaplains, because again, it's not about what's wrong with you. I'm telling you, that's not what it is. Mm-hmm. What we're trying to do is we're saying, hey, what are your needs today? By the way, I have them too.
Yes.
What are your needs today? And let's look at them. And if you're honest with me and tell me what those are, then I'm going to be able to get you the right help. And I may not be the best individual for that. Maybe you'll go see the chaplain. Maybe you won't. Maybe you'll go see the psych. Maybe you won't. Maybe it's just time for you and I to sit down in my office and have a conversation. Maybe that's what we need to do. But the goal is we got to do, we have those relationships. It's got to be built on trust and then sending people out to get the help they need.
How do you build the trust? How do you start with a new guy or a new coach comes in? What's your approach?
Well, when you walk up to the guy and say, is that all the stronger you are?
That's all you got.
Yes, that's all you got, man. That's all your special operations. Jeez, you know,
how'd you make it?
Yeah, that's not the best way. And honestly, that's not the that is definitely not the kind of individual that I want to hire either. So what I do is during the hiring process, and we're having conversation with the candidates or whatever, the questions we're always asking is, you know, I honestly, I'm not as concerned about, hey, what's your philosophy on Olympic weightlifting? And what's your philosophy on, you know, aerobic training and anaerobic and fast glycolytic and all these kind of, those are important things, but you know what? I got a feeling you probably already know that stuff. And we, you know, but what I want to know is, is when you're working with somebody, what is it you're trying to do? Like, what is your goal? And I want to hear things like, I want that individual to get better. I see my profession as a way to help a human being. And so it starts with hiring. And then secondly, you continue to tell your employees what the vision is. And it's about coming along as a coach to find out what their needs are. And then we're going to train to pull that potential out of that human being. And so many times I've told my coaches or coaches or whoever's coming in, hey, don't be scared not to say, to just be on the floor for the first couple of weeks and not even coach. I don't care. Just watch, see how things are going. And then suddenly you'll start seeing guys asking questions. And then what you have is you start relationships, and then guys across the room are saying, okay, well, that dude, I've deployed with him. They seem to be doing okay. I'll go see what's going on over here. And next thing you know, you have relationships starting.
And I guess it takes me back to whenever we'd have a new strength coach come in. I had one strength coach that came in, and I remember I went immediately to the head coach and I'm like, you got to fire this dude and bring back the old guy. Right. Cause I was best friends with the old guy. The old guy was hard. The new guy had like, we did this ramp up period that was like 2 weeks. And I was like, we don't have 2 weeks. I was like, these guys should have been lifting weights. They should have been training. What are we doing? Where I'm standing on a Bosu ball balancing on one foot. I'm like, how am I going to block that guy if I'm standing on this stupid ball? And then eventually, like 2 months in, him and I are thick as thieves. We're still in touch like regularly today. It's like, just give it time. But I do some of the assistants, like you're not as immediately drawn to, but then you start asking questions, right? And as a player, as one of the team members, you're asking questions and you're kind of vetting his knowledge base. And it's like, what do you think about this? And it's like, let me see if you diverge from the head coach. Let me see, it's like testing parents, I guess, if you're a kid.
Yeah. I've made some pretty good mistakes over the years, where I've kind of, been too hard on people. Like, what are you doing? Right. There's been times where it's worked pretty well, and there's times when it's just like you lose those people forever. So I will for sure say the trusting relationships, man, are everything. And then you have to have some knowledge too, because then guys start figuring out, like, do you know what you're doing or not?
Yeah, that's it. And that's where that relation, that's the make or break moment, right? Do you know what you're talking about? Do I trust you? And then a lot of the guys, right? Like, you think as a player, I'm like, well, I know better than this guy does. And then eventually you get overwhelmed with the knowledge that he has. He's just slow playing it to you. And then it's like, okay, now I really do trust what you're doing. From a physical standpoint, obviously move effectively, efficiently, and safely while on deployment. That's number one mission for you guys. Are these guys, are they mandated to come in a certain amount of times? Are they on a strict program, or is it one-on-one? How do you guys set it all up?
This is the all-time hardest thing for me to figure out what the best way of doing this is. Number one, if you tell a special operations person that you have to do this, it's usually comes across as a challenge, and they will push back and they won't do it.
Right.
So our programs are not mandated, not so much by us. And what I mean by that is the strength conditioning staff, we couldn't do it anyway, right? That's not, we're not commanders. So we're not, our human performance and wellness staff is not saying, hey, you've got to be here, because that's not going to go well with anybody. And really, to be honest with you, we have zero power over that. So that's obviously not going to happen. But it is kind of getting to the point now where commanders are, and we have a colonel, our colonel runs our compound and in our unit. And he's very much into making sure that guys are at least getting something and some sort of help. And so he is definitely, we're starting to kind of see where it might be towards that point where it might somewhat, I don't think it'll ever be mandated. And I don't think that's the right thing to do.
Right.
I do believe that, again, as we're developing trust over the years, that our programs are getting used more. But on the other hand, and this is why I hope it doesn't sound like I'm dancing around this, because I'm trying not.
Oh, no.
But on the other hand, there are times like, and I say this as a loving, caring, almost like I do care about these guys more than they'll ever know. Like they'll never know. And there are times like, I joke around. I'm like, I want to throw elbows. I'm like, come on, man, get the help. I promise you, this is going to be helpful for you. And with that, there's one more piece of this. As you know, growing up in athletics, the best way for you to get better at anything is you got to have consistent training. You got to be consistent.
That's right.
The problem and the major challenge we're having in special operations is consistency does not exist. Like, it's not there. And so consistent training is a very hard thing to come by. We overcome those, but we've had to get very creative on how we're doing it. But man, I'm telling you, if we could get to a place where, whether it's mandated or, and that's not my call, or if it's, you know, guys are just coming in and, hey, this is what we do. It's like, hey, I go to the range and I learn how to shoot better. I probably need to go take care of myself physically better too. If we could ever get to that point, like I always say, I've been around for a long time, 11 years in the military. We've come a long ways and we're still only scratching the surface on the amazing stuff we could do with the guys. And the biggest thing is holding us back is the consistency part.
And what is it about the consistency? Is it their scheduling, the other responsibilities that they have? What is it? What's holding that back? Because I would think when I hear special forces, I'm like, the one thing these guys have is willpower and discipline, right? So the consistency should fall right in line, but that's not what you're saying. Yeah.
The issue, they have so much willpower and discipline that, but part of that willpower and discipline is all about sacrifice. So I think I have a theory, I could be wrong, but at many times the guys don't like, I've got all this work to do that's coming down from all over the place. And I have my opinion on that I'm not going to say right now because I don't want to, you know,
right
on anybody's toes.
You don't need a colonel in your office.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Some of this stuff I think needs to be taken off their plates, you know, yeah. And the reason why is because they do need to be able to take care of themselves because performance is partially on wellness and you know, and the higher performer we have physically, mentally, spiritually, the better off they're going to be all the way around. And so anyway, that's the reason why it's so hard for them to get in and train consistently because they get the job done. It's always like, man, I got this work to do and I will get it done. And they'll get it done.
Yes.
But the thing is what's important. Okay. Now I'm just going to go ahead and say this. I'm kind of stepping out of line here, but in the military, we're always asking the question as are our guys ready? Are they ready? And what that means is, are they ready to deploy? Are they ready to go do the job they have to do downrange? And so with that being said, if someone in at a high level, and they are saying this, is we want our men and women to be mentally, physically, and spiritually prepared to take on the toughest day of their life, to go out and do the job that they do, then it shouldn't be a question of if we can get these men and women in to train during their workday, physically, mentally, and spiritually. It should be a question it should be a question of if we can get them in, but the question is when and how. In other words, we need to start taking things off their plates so that they can actually go and train physically and take care of themselves and mentally, physically, and spiritually. Because if you do that, you're going to have a force that's at a level we've never, I think, honestly, even higher, that's even better than we are.
Yeah, it's easing the path for them. And when you're talking about it, I just view them as the athlete, right? And so it's the job of the organization. They are the athlete. They are the specialist. They're the one that's going out and performing on game day. And the more that you can take off of their plate, the better food that you can give them, the more recovery time, the more space away from the work that you can give them, also knowing we've got this meeting, this meeting, this meeting. We have to do blitz pickup. We have to do our short yardage and goal line. We have to, there's things that have to get done in the workday. But also, we're given at the beginning of every work week, we are given a, it's on an iPad now, which is unfortunate, but the paper handout that has every 15 minutes of your life mapped out for you for that week, and including the plane and the hotel you're staying at, and here's when we're going to eat, and here's what's on the menu. You take all of that off of that individual's plate and watch that performance skyrocket. It's going to go up and up and up. And then you just bake in the workout to part of the deal. And as you know, working out is mental health. That does factor in a broad sweeping way into mental health and wellness, because pumping fresh blood and oxygen and getting that brain moving, that's the key to staving off the mental health issues. It's way more effective than any medication that you could ever give anybody.
That's right. Barbell therapy, man. So, you know, the thing that's interesting is too, is, and this is that holistic piece that we keep talking about. And yes, my background mainly is in physiology, but, I'm also spending a lot of time trying to learn. I'm never going to be the expert in it. I have other experts for that, thank goodness, but I'm trying to become more of a polymath, and the idea of this holistic model of performance and what that looks like. And so, for example, if you go and train physically, what that does for your brain, what it does for your mind, for your creativity, for your ability to go from a sympathetic nervous system drive to a parasympathetic nervous system drive to shift and to be able to, you know, be spun up, and then also being able to rest, and all of the factors that go along with it, to joint health, to, I mean, weight loss, to what's that do for your confidence, to emotion, and all of those. And honestly, all the variables that are out there on a simple workout, that what it does for you, we can't even count them all. And it's too chaotic to be able to really wrap our head around all of that. But the reality is, man, barbell therapy, we joke around with it, but it is, there's something to that. And not only that, man, but like, if I know for a fact that I've been training to survive, then what's that do for my survival? What's that do for my self-confidence?
Yeah, I'm built for this. Okay, so here's what you got to do. You got to take a copy of the book Spark by Dr. John Rady. He's a Harvard, you know that book? That's it. Just drop it off and just leave it there. Just, hey, Colonel, here's, because I mean, the crazy thing is, and they're finding now too, is like exercise and learning at the same time, that information just gets embedded in there because you're having fun, you're working, you're training, you're sweating. It's like all the juices are flowing, the neurons are firing. And now it's like, holy crap, I become just this incredible vacuum for information because I'm all juiced up.
Yeah. You know, the other day, it's interesting. And I do want to say something about our colonel in particular here in a second. But one of the things I will tell you is that for me, what I do every day is I get up and I want to learn. So for me personally, I take time to pray and I learn, and I every day is I do that no matter what. And what I try to do, what I've learned from that is as soon as I'm done doing my reading and writing and thinking and putting things down on paper and kind of, you know, doing that thought process. And there's days where like, man, I don't understand that at all. I'll go out and I'll work out and it's amazing. It's like, pop, oh my gosh. Okay. Now I get it. Now what's interesting about this is if you look back in, you know, some of your big time scientists, Einstein and Thomas Jefferson from one of our patriarchs and some of these guys that, you know, they had these amazing big ideas. If you'll notice, a lot of them used to go out for walks. Why'd they go out for a walk? The reason why is because their best ideas were coming to them during those times. They were, because here's what, if you sit down and read a book and you study and you train, it's training. You are training. And many times you have to get out, well, excuse me, not many times, every time, in order for us to get better at anything, we have to get outside of our comfort zones. So if you train and you learn, and that's if it's really hard and you're trying to wrap your head around that, and then you say, okay, how does that work over here? And how do I take these different ideas and put them together? You may not be able to get that figured out. And then all of a sudden you go out for a run or a lift or whatever it is, hit the heavy bag. That's one of my favorite things to do. Now, suddenly, all of a sudden, these ideas are coming to you. And I've learned to actually keep a notebook with me during my workouts, unless it's out running.
That's great.
Because that's where my best ideas are coming to me. And so I write them down many times.
Oh, that's awesome. I did a podcast with, his name's Dr. Andrew Huberman. He's a Stanford neuroscientist. He's got his own podcast now called the Huberman Lab, which is also his lab at Stanford. He's incredible. He's been on Joe Rogan since. I mean, he's like mind-bending smart, but he puts together three things that you have to learn. And it's, you have to have dopamine, you have to have frustration, which releases acetylcholine, and then you learn even more when you can spike adrenaline. So there's three things that kind of go into that. So when you talk about it, then you make these lateral connections that are going on from concepts that you're reading it and you're studying it, you're getting frustrated that acetylcholine's building up. And that's one of the things, especially over the age of 25, that we have to have, is the frustration of trying to learn material. Yes. Yeah. So it's super cool. So that's Andrew Huberman. Check him out. He's brilliant, but he's also really approachable and practical. So he speaks at a high level, but he lays it. I mean, he's a professor. So he's like 40. Like, so he's like on track to win the Nobel Prize in something. I think he's like working on solving blindness. Like he's trying to cure blindness. I mean, the guy's, it's ridiculous. Give me your daily routine. You kind of got into it at the beginning a little bit. Walk me through, when do you wake up, and what's a normal day look like for you?
So I get up anywhere from 4:15 to 4:30 in the morning. The only reason why I do that, I balance that out quite a bit, because I want to be a good dad and I want to be a good husband as well. And so, you know, those are always things that I have a hard time balancing out, and life is all about trying to balance all the different things out. Right. So I get up about 4:15, 4:30 in the morning. And the first thing I usually do is, I grab coffee because I really like coffee.
Yes. And, me too.
Yeah.
And how do you take it?
I usually just take it with some heavy cream in it. That's about it.
Awesome.
Yeah. And it needs to like be able to get out of the cup and walk by itself.
Yeah. Real strong.
Yes. So anyway, I get up and I usually grab my coffee. And the first thing I usually do is let the dog out, go to the restroom, and then go to the bathroom. And then I go back outside, because I live in Florida. So I usually can sit outside early in the morning, and I take time to pray and to think. And I usually do that for anywhere from about 15 to 20 minutes, sometimes 30 minutes, depending. And then I got my books, and then I got them all lined up, and I don't know, Huberman may think this is a bad idea. So I'm playing around with this idea too, but I feel like I do better by reading more than one book at a time.
Me too. Yeah, me too. Yeah, well, it's like different TV channels, right? Like you gotta have a variety of things going on. I mean, you don't want to watch the same show all the time. Yeah. Yeah, and it takes me forever to finish five of them, but I've got five of them.
Yeah, it's like, yeah. But the thing is if you think about it, I love to read. I actually have a little bit of maybe a psychological problem when it comes to reading. I love to read, and I've tried different things over the years, and I've found that many times I get one book and I zip through it and I don't remember as much as if I go, hey, let's stop. And if I don't get, like today, I'm trying to learn as much as I can on a concept called systems theory, so I can plug that into human performance. And there's a lot there, and I love it.
It's heavy.
Yeah. And I read 50 pages of it. And then I got to my 50th page today, and I'm like, well, reading all that over again, because there was so many things I got to go back and kind of figure out. But anyway, and then I also find that if I read more than one book at a time, I start making connections that you never would have done before.
Yes.
So anyway, I do that. And then depending, usually once I get that done, then I'll go out and do my own workout. And I usually use myself. I've used myself as a guinea pig for 20 some years anyway. And so now I'm just training myself as if I was an SF, you know, special operations guy. What would I need that I feel like I need in that environment? And so I train myself for that. And then I usually,
What does that look like?
So it's usually a conditioning day followed by a strength day, followed by a conditioning day. And not to get into the gory details of it, but I usually I'm working on some strength, a lot of speed and power, because I do still want to hit hard and move quickly and all those kinds of things. And then also I do some aerobic training, which has never been my, I am not a runner. I did not get the marathon gene.
I didn't either. I've got thick ankles.
Yeah, that's right. Which I'm okay with, be honest with you. I'm not really wanting to do that anytime soon anyway, yeah. But
stand and fight guy. Don't meet me in the phone booth. Well, you're going to have a problem, but if you want to outrun me, I'm going to have a problem.
Right. And so, but I do run quite a bit, but I also, what I try to do is my favorite way of kind of testing myself is how well can I take all these different aspects, from oxidative to anaerobic glycolytic to slow glycolytic to speed and power to strength to all the different physiological needs that I feel a special operations person would need. And I test myself on a heavy bag, and because that's when all of them come together. I used to get into fighting and all that kind of stuff, but I'm 51 now and I'm okay with people not hitting me in the head anymore. So
it starts to not feel great, right?
That's right. So I just take the heavy bag instead, and because it doesn't hit back. It's awesome.
So when you're fighting a heavy bag, what's that look like? You doing rounds?
Yeah. So I'm actually getting towards the end of my program right now. So I'm doing a four or five minute rounds, a minute break in between, and trying to keep a good work pace going and all that kind of stuff. So,
and do you track it all? Are you seeing how you're recovering, how quickly you recover? What do you use? Are you a data guy? And I know we're living in a super heavy data world, Aura rings, Whoop bands, Garmin watches, Apple Watch, Fitbit. It's like, there's a lot of data that could be mined out there. Are you into it at all, or what do you track?
So I understand the data part, because it's becoming very important in my job. It always has been, but we're definitely trying to, you know, effectiveness is a big deal when it comes to budgeting. So we're trying to do the best we can to show that we are, you know, doing something. But for me personally, I came up as a strength coach and had zero technology. In fact, for my first 9 years of a strength coach, I worked out of a 2,200 square foot facility with 300 athletes and had nothing but barbells, dumbbells, and some sleds. And so I've always been that way. And I guess that maybe that's that thing where I've never changed. For me personally, I go by how I feel here, because I'm a pretty hardworking guy. And I know days when I'm kind of sloughing off and should be doing better. And then I know those days when I'm like, I just don't feel well. So I'm going to be okay with that. And I'm not going to put out the work rate that I would like to do. And I think that also comes with age, because I've been around a long time and been training, you know, consistently for 20 some years. And so you kind of learn how to listen to yourself a little bit better.
And that's my question, is because I'm really intuitive when it comes to my own training, right? It's like, I know when to step on the gas. I know when I can give it hell. And I also know, hey, bud, it's time for a day off, or it's time for a little bit of a lull here. Let's change it up. How do you then systemize that to give to the guys? Like, how do you help them? Because I think the ultimate goal is, like, listen to your body, be intuitive with your body, and understand how it works, understand kind of the processes, the energy systems, and how to train those. How do you give that to the men you're leading?
Yeah, so mainly because here's the thing. I have four strength coaches, okay, that they're in charge of about 1,000 people.
Jeez.
Yeah. It's a mess. We can only do so much, right?
Yep.
And then when you look at it that way too, you know, the technological piece is a pretty hard thing to do as well. So we're getting creative on using technology. But at the end of the day, it's more important about that coach being alongside that soldier. It's the most important piece. So what you're going to find almost across the board in special operations is I used to see quite a bit in football back in the day too, is that, you know, guys will usually, it's not about if I do the lift correctly, it's if can I move that weight, right? And so there again, it's a coaching, having eyes on people, making sure that we're watching to make sure they're moving well. And then we make those, again, that comes back to the trust. Hey, you got to take some weight off because you can't do that. In fact, I just had a soldier a couple weeks ago I was watching deadlift and it was bad. Like bad. So
and he's a hard injury waiting to happen.
Yeah. Hardcore guy, super squared away, knows his job, is really good at it, has one of the toughest jobs there is. And I walked up to him. I just said, hey, and I started explaining to him like how to do this better. And he looked at me and says, that's the best way for me to do it. And I said, no, it's not. Because if you keep doing that. So again, I know I didn't answer your question necessarily. We do use a little bit of technology, but it's more about getting our eyes on people, because that's what coaching is. And we feel as if the best way to make changes in human beings is by being with them. And that goes back to the consistency factor. So we do have to plug in some technology from time to time, but you also have to have the budget for it. And you also have to still have a coach involved in that process to kind of help, hey, this is what these are the things we're seeing from this, and being able to give recommendations based off what we're seeing.
Yeah. And the last thing that any strength coach wants is a player getting hurt in their weight room, right? It's like, that looks worse than anything else. It's like, what happened to him? Oh, he's got to miss a game. Why? Well, he had some bad form on his power cleans. Not good.
Oh gosh. I hated those days, man. I'll tell you what.
Because it all comes back to you, right?
Yeah, it does.
What'd you do to him?
Yeah. Here's what I always say. No one ever remembers a strength coach when you're winning. But everybody always remember the strength coach when you're losing, because we got somebody we can blame.
Oh, every time there's a rash of injuries, you know, it's like, fire the strength coach. What did the strength coach do? You probably didn't allow him enough time in the off season or during season to work with the guys properly. And then you're running them into the dirt and then they get hurt. They've got tons of soft tissue injuries. And you go, well, whose fault is it? It's strength coach. Like, it's not the strength coach. It's not the strength coach's fault. It's your fault. You worked him too hard.
I've had so many conversations with coaches that have blamed us. And anyway, that's a whole nother conversation itself right there.
Well, Mike, we're kind of coming up on it. Tell me, I know you got a book in the works. What are you working on? And then we're going to have you back on when that's time. And then we'll celebrate the book.
Well, thanks for asking. Growing up in collegiate athletics and then going into the military, when I started working with SEAL teams, there was something that we ended up losing a whole troop of guys in one night. And one of the things about that experience for me was, I always believed I could always answer all the world's problems with physiology. And you got to remember, like I said, opening up the podcast, I believe that we as human performance specialists, our job is to help people move effectively and efficiently and safely inside their environment. We are preparing you to step into an environment to do well in that environment. Well, in collegiate athletics, it was always about, hey, can we win championships, right? And then shifting in and going in the military, I started to realize, didn't realize, it was obvious that, you know, wins and losses are much different here. And you know that, but you don't know that until you experience it. And so I took the same kind of approach to training individuals on the physiological side, and give these SEALs every tool I could imagine in order to help them move effectively, efficiently, and safely in the environment, with the goal to give them the tools to be able to fight and come home. And they then at one point they ended up all being killed, and they didn't even get a chance to fight back. Like there was, it was just a, it was instantaneous. It was over. And so anyway, that those were things that changed me quite a bit. And just in short, it was a change for me as a strength conditioning coach, as a human performance specialist, but it was also a change for me as a human being, as a man. And the reason why is because when I asked myself questions after that, I had found out what had happened. And I remember asking myself, did I do everything I could for them? And the answer that came back was, yeah, I think you did physiologically, but did I do everything I could for them? And I felt like the answer was no, I did not. I could have been, I could have slowed down a little bit when I was teaching them cleans, and I did do some of this, but you know, really got into their lives and really helped them with a lot of different things. And what that led to is me almost feeling exposed, like who I thought I was and what I brought to the world, I thought was being a strength conditioning coach. And I learned through that, that's not good enough. There's more to me than this. And so I really started asking myself a question. Like I did ask myself, I said, do you even know who you are? And I really didn't. And then I started looking around at other men around me. And I'm like, they're struggling with a lot of things as well. So what I ended up doing was I'm a believer, I'm a Christian, and I sat down and I just thought, well, I want to know how to be a man. So I started looking around and saying, okay, who are these guys? Who are the men that I can look up to? And realized every one of us are struggling and we're flawed in some way, shape, or form. That doesn't say that I can't learn from individuals. I can't look up to people. You know, and I started looking into history and looking at Ben Franklin, who's one of my heroes. And I love Ben Franklin. I love how he lived his life. But he was flawed. And I look at, you know, different individuals and doing the same thing. And so I thought, well, where do I find an authentic man? And the only way I could find it was in the Bible with Jesus Christ. And so what I did was I looked at seven archetypes in my life that I felt make a good man, but also how we can really screw those things up. And that's what the book's about. So I go and write up these seven characteristics of a man. And then I go in and talk about how we can get them wrong many times. And this is how we can get it right by following Jesus and how he lived his life. And so here they are. Hopefully I'll get them. This is not necessarily in the order, but disciple, servant, warrior, explorer, scholar, leader, and craftsman. So those seven things I talk about in the book, and it should be out hopefully November timeframe, I hope.
Awesome. That is awesome. And I don't know if people regularly tell you this when you share that you lost a bunch of guys that you trained. Sorry, man. Sorry, but yeah, that's and I say that probably because you're the strength and conditioning coach. You are part of the team, but you don't have the badge, right? Like you're a civilian working in there, but you're the team. You are part of the team. You're, as I said early, the strength and conditioning coach can be the heart and the culture of the team, and a good one can make or break that unit. So I'm sorry. I don't know if many people say that to you, but yeah, you've, you know, in your own right, you've probably got a lot to reconcile. And I don't know, did it affect your spirituality? Did it increase your faith? What did it do for you?
It increased my faith, and it put me on a road, on a path that drives me every day to this day. And so the guys that passed away, they were husbands, they were fathers, they were sons, they were, you know, all the different things. And at the end of the day, we raise these people up on these pedestals and go, well, they're SEALs, they're Green Berets, or this, that, and other thing. But the reality is they're still men. They're still human beings. They're just like you and me. They've just chosen a path that's different. And thank God we have them. But yeah, that experience changed me to the core. And it drives me every day. And those days when I wake up in the morning and I'm like, man, I'm tired. I don't want to do this anymore. Cause we all get those days. And you're just like, why am I doing this? I always remember what I'm doing it for. And that's what drives me every day. That helps me push past that. It helps me endure.
Yes. That's fantastic. Well, thank you, Mike. This was been a great hour for me. I've enjoyed spending time with you, and I hope we get to do it again.
Yeah, this was a blast, man. Let me know when you want to do it again, and I'll look forward to it.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Believe Network.